Boston Sabonis two-man game inside. Domas, dominant, dynamite inside on that one.
Not afraid, and he got some dog in him.
And the steal, they can tie it with a three. Murray, yes! A Murray miracle in the desert!
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse Podcast. My name is Brandon Nunez, got Hunter Patterson, writes for The Athletic here as usual. What's going on, my guy? You good?
All is well, bro. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Can't complain. Tempted to ask you about some of this Drake future Metro stuff at the beginning, but we're gonna save that for overtime at the end. You know, that's where it fits. Right now, Sacramento Kings got some postseason basketball. Play-in, not playoffs, but postseason. At least that's how I go about sort of dancing around that wording, I guess. They end up in the 9-10 spot with a 46-36 record, two less wins than they accumulated last season. Amid a handful of injuries and a fairly similar roster, like, feels pretty close to the same team as last year. And also at 46-36, 10th seed, Golden State Warriors, where the Kings went 2-2 against the Warriors in the regular season, but the went 10-7 in their division compared to Warriors going 7-9, so ended up winning that tiebreaker. I guess just, you know, now the Kings playing a 9-10 play-in game. Winner of that plays the loser of 7-8 between New Orleans and LA. And whoever wins the first 7-8 game makes it. And whoever wins that latter game, winner of 9-10 and loser of 7-8, ends up making the postseason and playing the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I guess just to start, you see the Kings get the Warriors, single elimination, play-in game, 9-10 spot. Just what are kind of your first thoughts in seeing that matchup?
I go back almost a year ago to April 30th, I think it was, when Steph had 50 at Golden 1, to be honest. And it has a lot to do with experience. The Warriors have been here several times before. In Steve Kerr's tenure with the Warriors, I believe he's 23-3 in playoff series, not even just games. So people may not love his schemes and things like that at this point in his career with the roster he has, but he's been there, done that. He's won championships for a reason. And I think back to the classic 50 piece that Steph had, to be real with you. And I think the energy there tomorrow will be amazing. I think it'll be similar to what we saw all throughout the playoffs last year, but it's hard to bet against Steph in moments like these. The Warriors finished the last seven games of the regular season 5-2. Kings were quite literally on the opposite end of that spectrum at 2-5. So, I mean, it's tough to not see the Warriors coming out victorious, to be completely honest.
It is. I also said before they were locked into the play-in that I refuse to make predictions for a play-in game because
here we are.
It's March Madness, bro. Anything can happen in one game. I keep going back to Kelly Olynyk's 27 in Game 7 against Washington. You look at guys, Grant Williams shot how many threes for Boston? Apparently, I got two Celtics examples, but shot how many threes for Boston against Milwaukee in a Game 7? You know, anything can happen in one game for basketball. Like, I'm going to go through the previous four matchups that these teams had in the regular season. For what it's worth, from Sacramento's perspective, this was game 2, 4, 16, and then 43 of the regular season. So, played damn near just under half a season since the last time they played the Warriors.
Right.
And asking about it at today's practice, you know, De'Aaron kept saying there's no surprises, that both these teams know each other really well, that they're not going to surprise each other in any sort of way. Now, you look back at these games, for example, game 2, the first one that they played against each other. Starting lineup for the Warriors, CP3, Steph, Clay, Wiggins, and Looney. Trayce Jackson-Davis played 5 minutes. Pajemski played 0 minutes. JaVale McGee played 12. He was their backup center for the Kings. Yeah. Chris Duarte played 26 minutes. I would not be surprised and would actually be more surprised if either of those guys saw the floor next game with JaVale and Chris Duarte on Sacramento's perspective. Yeah. And from Golden State, Trayce Jackson-Davis probably going to start, as he has been for the last, I believe, about, I don't have it in front of me like I thought I did, 12 or so games of the regular season. Warriors went 10-2 in their last 12. And Trayce Jackson-Davis moving into that starting lineup is a big part of that. And again, first game, Warriors do win by 8. You look at that second game, Chris Paul's first game off the bench of his career. Yeah. No De'Aaron Fox. So Davion Mitchell gets the start. And that's the game where, let me make sure I do have this correct, right? Yeah, that is the game where Clay hits the game winner.
Yeah.
Over Davion Mitchell. Domantas Sabonis banked in a shot with about 13 seconds left. Clay comes back on the other end, 0.2 seconds left, makes a shot over Davion and hit him with the too little, which has got to be tough from Davion's perspective. Not going to lie, as a dude that's probably about 6 feet. The next matchup, that one was a one-point game, obviously the Clay game winner in that second one. The third one, also a one-point game, and this was a play-in game, where Malik Monk hit a game winner, if you'll remember, probably one of the more wild game winners that I've seen. One of those where it's like, you know, kind of a prayer was answered.
You could try that 10 times and you're probably making it once.
Even if you're Malik Monk, you're probably only making it once or twice.
As confident as he was after that too, because he was just like, this is what I do. Typical Malik answers, but we know.
It's very like Paul Pierce Wizards. You know, did you call bank? No, I called game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Malik might have even joked. He did post game. He did joke post game, actually. Somebody asked him, did you call bank? And he said, nah, I called game.
Yeah.
That's funny. I forgot about that. But no Keegan Murray in that game. And again, you look at the Warriors side, going typical starting lineup for that point of the season. Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, Looney. Not the five that you're going to see right now. This was the first game, because in the second game, JaVale McGee did play backup center for the Kings. This was the first game, game 16 of the year for the Kings, third matchup with the Warriors, where JaVale played the first half. Second half, they totally went to Trey Lyles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the backup five. And then you go to that fourth game, game 43 of the year, where the Warriors also win by one. Again, DNP from Trayce Jackson-Davis, just pointing that out to emphasize how different these teams are now compared to these previous matchups. But that was another game where, kind of an outlier, you know, HB drops 39.
Yeah.
A season high. But I'm not going to lie, I do look at that game and I'm like, this is the type of shit that could happen in a play-in game.
It is.
You have no clue what could happen. So again, 1 point deficit in game 43 where the Kings get the win. Game 16, 1 point deficit, Kings get the win on a game winner from Malik Monk. Game 4, Klay Thompson hits a game winner and the Warriors win by one. And then that first game, game 2, the Warriors had won by 8. So 3 of the 4 were decided by 1 point. And I kind of want to ask you about that backup five a little bit. Like I mentioned, JaVale, the first two, first half of game 3, JaVale, and then they go to Trey. Game 4, fully Trey. No Alex minutes. Alex Len, no JaVale McGee minutes.
Right.
I kind of got the impression at practice today made me think that like this might be as simple as who hits their triples, but that makes me lean towards thinking Trey at that backup five. And I'm curious if you're kind of at the same.
I think he offers more offensively, but then with Trayce Jackson-Davis, if he is on the floor while any of the backup fives are for the Kings, you might want a little bit more rim pressure that Alex, not rim pressure, but, inside defense, more or less, because if Trayce is in there, he's a huge lob threat for the Warriors. He's pretty good on the offensive boards, I want to say, so he's able to get putbacks. And Trey can do what he can, but at the end of the day, he's still pretty undersized to be a five. And Alex, one thing that is really beneficial about him is that he has 6 fouls just like everybody else, and I think he'll be able to use those probably more at will than other people you might want to stay out of foul trouble. And he's just more of a rim protector than I think anyone on the Kings outside of JaVale. And JaVale comes with his own set of amusing attributes, you could say. So, yeah, like you said, if Trey is knocking the three ball down and he's able to space the floor offensively, and for what it's worth, although he is a smaller 4-5, he hustles his ass off. Mike loves that about him. So I think he offers a lot of versatility. But the thing that Alex has that's unparalleled by probably anyone else on the team, again, outside of JaVale, is the rim protection. And if it's a situation where Looney's on the floor and he's coming off the bench on that backup five for the Warriors, and you may need less of that, and Trey may be able to slot in better than Alex would there. But, yeah, I think Alex has been doing some good things. Like, you and I always talk about the fouls. He's pretty foul prone, but
that's his thing for sure. That's his downside.
Very much. He and Chris Duarte are a little bit in the same boat there, but I could see it maybe a mix of both of them early on, and then Mike kind of gets a feel for what's working and what's not, and then second half he may just ride with one of the two.
No Malik Monk, no Kevin Huerter, and by the way, update today confirmed by Mike Brown, no Malik Monk. No surprises, right? But you know, I think there were a couple of us today walking into the practice facility thinking, you know, is there any chance that Malik's in a jersey right now?
Right.
Not happening. And no Gary Payton the second on the other side.
That's pretty big, too.
It is. I'm going to throw it to you. Like, what else are you looking for in this matchup?
I think the second unit is going to be the key because I think the two teams are pretty familiar with each other offensively. On both sides of the ball as far as the starters go. So I think they match up pretty well. Obviously, there's an adjustment in Keon being in that starting lineup. But he offers things that Kevin didn't defensively. And it seems he's starting to trust his work and his three ball a little bit more than he did earlier on in the season. So he's not Kevin. He's not going to be able to create as much attention off of DHOs and things like that. So there is an adjustment there. But I think the second unit is huge because the Warriors more or less have their lineups figured out, it seems, and they feel pretty comfortable with their depth on the bench. And the Kings are trying to piece it together the best they can. And ultimately, too, bro, I think it really comes down to Domas and how he plays offensively because the Warriors all last series – around this time last year, were not respecting him when he had mid-range jumpers, when he had opportunities to be aggressive, and he kind of played into their hands. So he's been a bit more aggressive. I know the Suns game, before it all went bad down the stretch, he was getting after it during the early minutes and first couple quarters. So if you get an aggressive version of Domas, I think that can be a game changer coupled with how the second unit kind of comes out.
Yeah, I think the Warriors definitely have the advantage in that second unit when you look at Chris Paul, Pajemski.
Yeah.
Kuminga, who is an interesting factor in this. He's one of those guys of, are you going to get a really damn good Kuminga game, or are you going to get one of those where he tries to do too much?
Yeah,
you know, and there's been stuff of maybe him not being super happy with his role getting moved around again at the end of this year. And I think that's what could make guys prone to doing a little too much. But on the Domas point, do you want him taking those mid-ranges? The Portland game, last game of the season, he took probably more than he had all year long.
Yeah.
And I saw some people kind of being like, oh, is this in preparation for the Warriors now? They didn't know they were going to play the Warriors going into the night, for what it's worth, or maybe it's just preparation for playoffs. Mike Brown got asked very specifically if that was the case today, and he said not on his side at very least. You know, maybe that Domas was thinking that, and if he was, that Mike was unaware of that. But I'm kind of like, you didn't do it all year long.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it would be a thing more consistently throughout the entire season. And I feel okay about his mid-range jumpers, but I feel a whole lot better about him taking four of them in this game against the Warriors if he was doing it throughout the regular season.
Yeah, I would too. And I think it's a thing where if he gets an open look, I would love for him not to be in his head and just to play basketball. So if you're going to shoot it with confidence. And if you miss the first one, it's all right, bro. Like, double back. And if you get another opportunity, shoot that next one with confidence. But what I don't want is just a bunch of shots getting thrown up just because you're open, more or less. Like, be strategic with it. And I think if he's confident, let it fly a couple times, see how it goes. And if you're knocking them down, great. You get to keep Draymond and whoever else is on you honest in how they defend the rest of the team, including you. And if you don't, I mean, it's all right. It's still early in the game. So if he has open looks early in the game, I'd like him to step into him with confidence and just kind of see how it goes.
I'm really unsure about those.
I don't blame you,
those
bro.
Middies, man.
Yeah.
I really probably don't have much more else than that, really. Like, I'm worried about it. I get that if he pulls it, that's what they're willing to give up. And I'm expecting them to defend him pretty similarly. You know, I think a big part of their game plan last postseason was also taking away Kevin and Keegan and kind of that two-man game with Domas. And I don't think they're going to approach Keon the same way. And you mentioned Davion, who I'm starting to trust his work too, let me tell you. Since the start of 2024, 48 games, Davion shot 48.5% from the field and 40.9% from three on 2.3 a game.
Come on, man.
I'm telling you. You've been telling me. That's my bad. You've been telling me. But first of all, if you're the Warriors, are you guarding him from three?
Honestly, the game plan for him and Keon is going to be the same to me. Like, you're going to have to show me. I'm going under on screens.
Yeah.
I want to see if in the biggest moment of the season, when everyone knows a single game elimination, are you going to be comfortable enough to knock that shot down? So I would probably go under to start and then adjust if they knock down a couple and get the confidence rolling.
I think the same. I asked Mike specifically about Keon today of, you know, even at the end of this regular season, teams have been going under way more than they probably should if you just want to look at percentages, but Keon has to prove it. And it wouldn't surprise me if it took a whole postseason of him proving it before teams like gave him that respect. But Mike's answer of, do you think they're going to kind of let him shoot, was, if I think I know them as well as I do, I think they're going to respect him as a shooter. But it wouldn't surprise him if they gave him, you know, 1, 2, 3 at the beginning of the game to see how he deals with the moment. And, you know, initially my thought on this matchup was really kind of how I felt going into a postseason series of, if De'Aaron Fox is the best player on the floor, the Kings can do this. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's good enough that he could be. Now, Curry is a high bar.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm kind of like thinking about it more from Golden State's perspective. I think that I would just try to have it be anybody but Fox. You know, like, whether that's Domas shooting those mid ranges or that's Keegan, maybe not wide open triples, obviously, for him or Harrison, but like being willing to help off a little bit. Or I think De'Aaron could get doubled from the jump, you know. And
good. Yeah.
If I agree with you that I think Davion and Keon are going to get defended like that, but I guess my follow up on that is, how does that make you feel from Sacramento's perspective? How much faith do you have in those guys to knock down those looks? If they're taking 15 combined triples, how many do we feel good about going down?
I think at this point, based on the amount that they've made, I want to say Keon was 47, almost 48% over the games that they played in April. He was 44% from three all throughout March. And I think it's been obviously you will want Kevin to be healthy and you will want him to be around and providing what he does for this team. But for Keon to step in and be a starter for almost 2 months now and just get a feel for playing in games that matter, obviously none of this magnitude, but down the stretch throughout the season, each game was very important. And I think they felt the weight of it. So for him to get those reps and get that experience, I think he's probably going to be pretty confident. And just from watching him all throughout the season, he really strikes me as one of those people who does not get rattled by big moments. Like, it's almost like he's playing with house money because he wasn't supposed to be in this situation anyway. And he's probably expected to not play well. So, shit, why would I even worry about not playing well if that's the expectation for me? So I feel really good about Keon. I think Davion actively seeking out his shot is huge for him because he's gotten in that rhythm throughout the last couple seasons as well. I mean, last couple months of the season as well. So I feel pretty good about them. The only thing, though, is like to the flip side of letting everyone but De'Aaron beat you, I think there could be like a reversal of that almost to where it's just like, we'll let De'Aaron get everything he wants, but like who else can really hurt us?
That could be interesting. I could see that.
Yeah. I would hope that would be Keegan's time to shine and whatnot, but like there's not a Malik coming off the bench that you have to be super concerned about anymore.
Yeah. And these last like three, four-ish games of the regular season, we've seen Mike pretty much cut it down to an 8-man rotation. Mm-hmm. And if you really get towards those last couple games, that's like Alex Len playing 5 minutes. You know, he got asked today, are you still going to kind of roll with 8-man rotation? He's like, yeah, probably, you know, maybe 9, 9.5, which I take the half is the couple minutes that Domas needs to sit, that maybe Alex or Trey goes out there, whatever that ends up looking like. But I don't know, man. This is going to be chaos to me, and it feels very hard to predict at all. Like, I think Golden One's going to be a great time. I think that De'Aaron will rise up to the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know from Sacramento's perspective who else I feel comfortable relying on, but I feel like the Warriors are probably saying the same thing with Steph.
Yeah, I mean, Klay has been playing pretty decent down the stretch, playing better than he was to start the season, but I don't know who you really trust on any given night outside of Steph to provide offense consistently. I think Pajimsi, he's been great off the bench, and I mean, yeah, I believe he's not really even sure if he's back starting. I know he started plenty of games this year, but in whatever role he comes in, I love his confidence, but Klay, I would think possibly just because he's been here so many times, he has the confidence, I would assume, to be that number two he has been to Steph his entire career. But there's not another person I trust on that team as much as I trust Steph.
I originally, again, was just like, God, De'Aaron has to be the best player. And now I'm kind of like, I feel like it's going to be one of these other guys having a big game. And which of the team's other guys show up? In a way, again, like the Warriors turn the ball over a lot. That's been their weakness since they've been the best team of potentially all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be about scoring off those turnovers, right? Where, you know, you can look at the first game of the year. Kings have 14 turnovers, the first matchup of the year, second game of the year, first Warriors-Kings matchup. Kings have 14 turnovers. Warriors scored 26 points off that. Yeah. Meanwhile, Warriors 19 turnovers. The Kings scored 18 off that. Now, it's not horrible when you just look at Sacramento's conversion rate, right? But the issue is if you're turning the ball over and that's leading to transition threes for Steph Curry or Klay Thompson, these guys that are elite at transition threes, and you're not capitalizing off their turnovers and their, what I'm assuming is going to be minimal amount of mistakes, that's going to be big. You know, you need to turn Steph over. I think in some of these games that can definitely enable you. The same thing with Draymond. You know, I think scoring off that, who knocks down their triples, really, which spray threes, paint touches, we could talk about all that. There is an aspect of do they go in or not that is going to play a part here. And specifically when we're talking about one game, and do we need to worry about offensive rebounds? Because everybody talks about Steph's 50 ball, but he shot the ball damn near 40 times and got a lot of extra opportunities because Looney was destroying Sabonis on the offensive glass.
Yeah.
You know, and I was talking to your coworker Anthony Slater today and about, you know, will they try to do the same thing they did last year? The Warriors, that being of very rarely were they running two bigs at once. you know, as the series went on. And the Kings made their adjustments. Like, Terrence Davis is playing a lot in game 6 and ends up playing in game 7. Also, they go to Trey Lyles, a little away from Davion Mitchell. But on Golden State side, are they going to go with that starting lineup they've had recently of Draymond and Trayce Jackson-Davis? If they do that, do they pull one of those guys pretty quick and try to go small? Like, Kuminga is a huge X factor again for me. Like, yeah, the same things I mentioned earlier. I mean, I am picking the Warriors if I have to pick, but I really, really feel like anything could happen. And I know that's shit analysis.
But I feel it, though.
I can't help it. It's one basketball game, dude.
I completely understand. I'm wholeheartedly – it's hard to not trust Steph in these moments. And even though I may not trust Draymond and Klay the way I used to, I still trust the fact that they've been here countless times. This is a Kings team that's not healthy, which isn't an excuse. Very few teams are healthy at this point in the season. But, I mean – we saw what happened when there was a healthy Kings team against, semi-healthy. De'Aaron was dealing with some things. Domas was too. But we saw what happened last year in a winner-take-all game on this same court that we're about to see it on tomorrow. So it's kind of hard to see anything other than that happening. And I think just the fact that Steph seems to love these moments, like, he's somebody who probably – is better in these closeout games. I would like to see the stats on that. I probably should have looked that up before we started podding, but he seems to just be huge in moments where he's like, damn, the spotlight is on me. I know the team is counting on me for these things, and he's just a killer. So, I mean, it's hard to go against him. Although De'Aaron, to me, has shown everything he's needed to for me to believe in him. I think what he did last year with the fractured finger was amazing. It was something that probably not everyone outside of the people who have watched him all throughout last year expected, but he exceeded expectations, and I'm excited to see what he does as well.
That was going to be my next question. Do you trust De'Aaron to show up big time in this one?
Yeah. I there's like no doubt in my mind that he'll be where he needs to be. And I think he's had enough games of like 9 for 23, like 8 for 24, nights like that where he's not where he needed to be. And I thought he ended the season really well. Obviously, it was the G League, I mean Portland Trailblazers, and he only played 26 minutes. But he looked to be really decisive, and it was almost like he was using that game for just kind of – getting back to his form that he needed to be at. 10 for 12, 71% from the field, only took three threes, made two of them. But when he's getting downhill and he's getting to like his fall away jumpers in the paint, he's not really like second guessing himself where he's getting in situations where he does turn the ball over. He seems to be extremely comfortable. And again, it was the Blazers, but it felt like a tune-up game for him to know where he needs to be and the things he needs to do to be successful tomorrow.
I'm with you. De'Aaron is probably the guy I trust the most on Sacramento going the next game. Like, we've seen Mad Fox after maybe not getting a whistle or, you know, getting a tech. Like, that's motivated Fox. I think they go hand in hand. And I think that you're absolutely going to get that tomorrow in this play-in game. When it comes to Steph, where I'm expecting the same thing, you know, you wrote a piece earlier this year about Keegan's defense and specifically about how a moment against Steph early this year, I don't know if you remember which specifically one of these it was, where that's kind of where he got his confidence. But how much of a difference do you think Keegan's defensive growth makes in this series, specifically giving you another option on Steph? When last year, you know, I asked him not long ago, earlier this month or whatever, what'd you learn last postseason that you're kind of trying to bring into this one? And he said, not being the Mickey. And the Mickey, for people unaware, is the term the Kings use for the worst defender on the floor. Right. I'm assuming it has some reference to Mouse in the House, Mickey Mouse, you know.
Yeah.
But Keegan, pretty much admitting that he was that guy that last year, that the Warriors would target him. How much do you think his growth, him being an option on Steph, helps in this?
I think it's huge. And I think just kind of seeing how Keegan's competed over the last 2 years, I think he'll be extra aware of how he played to start last playoffs. And he had, I mean, he was a rookie at the time. There was, I think, a necessary adjustment period for any rookie who's starting, especially against the Warriors, who at the time were defending champs. So to me, like, I gave him grace for just how that series went and how he rebounded from it. But I think he's coming into tomorrow night aware of that and looking to kind of atone for a little bit. Like, he knew he didn't play well. He was actively getting asked about it all throughout the beginning of the series. And I think he'll probably come in with a little bit of a chip. And the fact that he did feel more confident and feel like he was finding himself a little bit defensively when he got those couple steals on Steph earlier in the season in San Francisco. So I think he's going to be a huge factor. I would leave it up to De'Aaron, honestly. I would assume De'Aaron's not going to start on him. But if you get a mix of Keon, De'Aaron, Davion at some point, and Keegan, those are a lot of different ways to try to defend one player, which is obviously more than necessary for somebody like Steph. But I think with those four alone, it's going to probably be a good mix of approaches and how you want to stop someone like Steph.
Keon is a new look for him for sure. I do, by the way, worry, or I'm curious to see how, if Keon deals with foul trouble.
Yes.
I feel like that's one thing. And in the postseason, I'm sure he's getting told a lot, like they let you get away with a lot. And that's been the case at the end of this regular season too, you know, but if you're hearing that, and then he's already a very handsy defender, that's just how he plays. Davion's more physical, you know, not going to get steals because hands are back the whole time. Keon is swiping at the ball the whole time. And that's why he's effective, but some fouls come with that. And if he got in foul trouble, be interesting to see what direction you go. Do you go like Keegan at the two and Trey at the four next to Harrison, or do you slide Davion in there? But I think the addition of Keon in this matchup, and, you know, some people felt the type of way about the coaching staff going away from Davion in game 6 and 7 last postseason, where they went to Terrence Davis, and that worked amazingly in game 6, and they just rolled with it in game 7. But it wasn't because of Davion's defense, obviously. It was because he was just straight up getting ignored offensively. And I think his offensive growth could really help the Kings defense, depending on how comfortable, confident, and if the shots are going down for him tomorrow night. So it's a tough spot between them, though. And I think De'Aaron's taken a big step this year on the defensive end. I don't hate their options. No, I don't think anybody's stopping Steph, and I wouldn't expect anybody in the league to stop Steph, but I think they can make things tough. It's just when you get into a pick and roll, like Domas specifically better be pretty locked in. You're a little too deep, and this is partially why I don't see Alex Len working in this series, is you go pick and roll, and Alex Len's in a drop. He's quicker than you think for a 7-footer, but he doesn't have like that backpedaling movement or anything like that, or the hip speed to necessarily be able to do that. And I think kind of puts them in a tough spot. How do you feel about Harrison Barnes? Okay. Bro. Let me go HB and Keegan here, actually, because I feel like they fall in the same, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's funny to me that I look at it and I thought of Davion's threes and Keon's threes and Trey's threes before I thought of HB and Keegan's. And maybe that's because I'm hesitant to trust those guys. I mean, it's weird because I'm hesitant to trust the others, but they feel like more of actual X factors. And I just don't know what to expect of HB and Keegan.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you're the same.
I think Keegan, he's at least been getting shots up. He's definitely gotten double-digit shots up every game since Malik has gone down. And I think he realizes there's more on his shoulders to carry the team a little bit offensively without Malik. So I like the fact that he's at least being aggressive, sometimes even looking guys off who may be open to get his own shot. I personally love that from Keegan.
Are you down for that in the play-in?
100%. Sign me up. I mean, because if not him, who really?
Yeah.
And possibly it could be the other guy we're talking about in HB, but he was someone I was going to bring up too. I think he's a huge X factor. He had 39 that game earlier in the season against the Warriors, and he seemed like he couldn't miss. I don't want to say it was personal for him. I don't know, but he seemed to really be more locked in than I probably have seen him all season.
They were really posting him up in that game, and he was
cool. Bro, he looked like Carolina HB.
Yes.
So I was like extremely blown away by that game, but I think he has less looks for himself drawn up than Keegan does most nights. So I think HB is the biggest X factor probably for the Kings outside of Domas offensively and his midi. Because if HB is rolling, that makes it so much more difficult on the Warriors, bro. Like, you can possibly draw plays up for him. I wouldn't recommend it in a play-in game. But HB has a really quick release, and he loves the slow Euro. And he just has a few different ways to score that have become pretty effective for him at this point in his career. So if he's someone you're kicking it out to after you get a paint touch, and like Mike Brown loves to say, if you spray it out to him and he's knocking those down, that could be a game changer. So I trust Keegan. Saying all that to say, like, I trust Keegan more than I do HB, partially because I think the coaching staff is really drilled into Keegan's head. Like, bro, you have to bring something else if you're not making your shots. And Keegan has been really good on the offensive boards these last few games. He's been able to create extra possessions for the team, which is huge. And I don't really see HB doing too much of. But if I could like summarize it shortly, I would say Keegan is overall more valuable because of the things that he brings outside of shooting and scoring. But I would still consider HB to be the X factor because he's someone who can, like, if he's rolling, he's going to shoot. I think HB, for the most part, is going to shoot when it's kicked out to him. But if he's knocking him down, that's a game changer.
I hope you're right. Both these teams are, they protect the paint more than they protect the three. Something De'Aaron kind of pointed out today, which makes me think live by the three, die by the three, kind of, in this game, and obviously goes beyond that. But HB is a big part of that. Keegan's a big part of that. And Mike was saying, if we take 33s, then we take 33s. If we take 50, we take 50. But pretty much saying, like, we have to take what they give us, specifically in a postseason game, just like this play-in is. Yeah, man. This is chaotic. Do you have anything else on this matchup that you're really watching for before I ask you a little bit about Lakers Pelicans?
I think we covered it for the most part. You brought up a really good point that kind of made me backtrack on Alex Lynn. Thinking about him in drop coverage almost makes my stomach hurt a little bit.
I think Curry would cook him.
Oh my god, yeah, it would get ugly. So yeah. That part I don't love. I was thinking about the interior presence, but yeah, I just think the bench is going to be huge. I think the starters more or less will hold their own against the Warriors starters, but the bench will be huge.
Do you think so? Starting five, obviously Fox, Keon, HB, Keegan, Domas, Davion, Trey. Anybody else? Damn, if you can't shoot, do you throw Sasha in there for 5 minutes in the third quarter? You know?
Possibly. I think Sasha, I don't worry about him offensively. I think he's really just like instinctive. He knows when to cut. He knows how to move offensively, but he may very well get picked on defensively if he's out
there. He would, for sure. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So I don't know. It gets murky after that. I wholeheartedly at this point, based on personnel and who's available, trust Davion and Trey. But after that, man, Chris Duarte seems like a great locker room guy. Don't want to see him out there tomorrow, to be honest. So, yeah, maybe throw Alex in, see how he does, try to keep him out of pick and rolls, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. And, again, anything could happen in this one game. I think main things for me are scoring off of Golden State's turnovers. I think you need to be efficient off that. De'Aaron needs to be really good, which is – that's probably one of the things I feel the most confident about. And who's going to hit their threes for either team? Like, those are kind of the three things that I'm mainly watching for. And again, winner of this, loser goes home. This could be the last game that Klay Thompson plays as a Golden State Warrior. Could be a loss to the Sacramento Kings. I don't know that I'm predicting that necessarily, but you never know. The loser goes home. Winner plays the loser of Lakers-Pelicans. From the Kings' perspective, you're 0-5 against the Pelicans. You're 4-0 against the Lakers. Does that in itself answer the question of who you'd rather play? Or 100%. Really?
100%, yeah. If I'm a Kings player or fan, whoever, I am tomorrow being a because Lakers and Pelicans
play first. Wednesday? No, they play same day. Early on.
Oh yeah, because it's in New Orleans. So yeah, tomorrow night, if I'm a Kings player or a Kings fan, I am a Pelicans fan first and then a Kings fan after.
Bron doesn't scare you?
Bro, yes. For no question. He scares me more than Steph, to be honest. But
more than less than the Pelicans though?
Yeah, this is where I kind of
probably there's no good answer to be fair.
I know. I might start contradicting myself a little bit because I think I'm a big odds guy, bro. Like the odds of one team beating you six times in a row it's honestly insane. If you lose six times in a row to one team, then that team is just better than you. So
I felt the same way, but I also said the same shit going into the fifth game.
Me too, bro. Me too.
You know?
So I don't know. I do not trust Bron. I mean, I do trust Bron, and I wouldn't want to play against him in a single elimination game, especially after he's lost one and he feels even more pressure than he did in the first. But maybe matchup-wise, Mike having history with LeBron and the Kings maybe being able to say, okay, who else is going to beat us other than him? But, I don't know. That's a great point. I'm torn at this point.
Yeah, again, I don't think there's a good answer, but I'll just say there was a point in my life I had to learn to not bet against LeBron James.
This is one?
It was probably, you fucking Heat fan, it's probably when Bron had that look in his eyes when he killed Boston, I think it was game 5 or game 6 or whatever, when I knew the Celtics, that team was cooked, and I was just like, I'm not betting against this guy.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe I just can't let go of that, but I would personally rather play the Pelicans. But for what it's worth, I asked Twitter earlier, and it's probably one out of every 20 are saying the Pelicans. Everybody's saying Lakers, Fakers, whatever the hell, you know, so you're not alone.
It's tough though, because just based on that conversation, I want to switch my pick and say Pelicans. I'm like I said, I'm big on odds, probability. One team beating you six times, I don't know.
Right.
But Bron, we've seen what he's done, and I would not want to see him either. So.
And I don't buy, I don't put stock into the Domas being whatever and O against AD. If anything, that probably really hype AD up, to be honest, because it would get talked about. Last thing before we get to OT real quick.
Mm-hmm.
If the Kings lose tomorrow, how do you view their season as a whole? Let me say this real quick. I said earlier in the year, I thought a competitive first round was a successful season, which makes me ask myself if a play-in exit is a failure of a season, but failure seems too harsh to me.
The only reason I won't say it's a failure is because of the terrible injury luck they've had. If this was a fully healthy team with Kevin in the starting lineup, Malik coming off the bench, this new version of Keon, who maybe isn't as confident as he is because he wasn't starting as much, but you have him in the rotation off the bench as well. Then if they were in this situation, I would say, yeah, this is a bit of a letdown year. This is something that shouldn't have happened coming off last season. But all things considered, losing Kevin, losing Malik, and I don't want to use these as excuses, so I'm definitely not trying to do that. But all things considered, I can't say it's that much of a letdown because they more or less didn't add anyone in the offseason last year when it was clear they may have needed someone. And again, in leading up to the trade deadline. So with the team they've had, the things that they've done, I got to tip my hat to Mike Brown and his staff for where they've been able to get him. But again, all things considered, I wouldn't say this is the most disappointing outcome ever. especially considering you would have to play Steph and the Warriors and then either a team you've lost to 5 times in one season, which is so crazy to me, or LeBron. So considering their opponents, all things considered, I wouldn't say that this is just the biggest letdown.
I'm the same. And I think that the fan base is getting a little doom and gloomy, which I understand. Disappointment compared to each person's expectations, I guess it's all relative. But, you know, I think that they're still in a good spot long term. Now, Jordy Fernandez just got a job as the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, which yes. We will, I'm sure, dive into in more detail and what that could mean. Potential defensive coordinator replacements, which, by the way, Mike Brown is very well liked around the league. So I'd feel pretty good about who may come in and replace Jordy. And also, I'll just add real quick, like, I think that the best coaching staffs in the league get assistants taken off their staff all the time and getting other jobs. That's one of the better signs, actually. I think that it speaks really highly of this current coaching staff and is a good thing more than a bad. But between Jordy and potentially what the hell is going to happen with Malik Monk's offseason, I get the concern. I still think they're in a good spot long term. I think that we've always known this team needs to make another swing, and that's got to be in a trade before I'm really going to judge them on if they're able to take that next step. So that's kind of where I'm at with this season. Again, shout out Jordy. I forgot. Last thing I asked you before we moved to OT. Mm-hmm. It would be the Thunder if the Kings got out.
Right.
I wouldn't hate their chances.
I was thinking the same thing. Am I crazy? No, I don't think you are. Just based on the fact that, one, they beat the completely healthy Thunder, I believe. I know Shea was playing for sure.
I think just Gordon, but who knows? I mean, that okay, might yeah, always be the
facts,
case. But
facts. Love Gordon, but I don't know how much of a difference he can make. But De'Aaron was out in that first matchup. They beat them, they being the Kings, beating the Thunder. And they nearly beat them again towards the end of the season. I would not like the Kings' chances against the Nuggets. So, I mean, I could see that series if they end up making it. And depending on if Malik may be able to come back, who knows? I could see that being a 5-6-game series. More likely 6, depending on health.
I think they'd have a chance. And I also simultaneously somehow feel like I'm disrespecting the Thunder while doing that. But the inexperience is real, man. And sometimes I feel insane for this, mainly like when SGA is really cooking.
Yeah.
But my hot take all year is that I don't know that De'Aaron's that far from him, man. If you put De'Aaron in a 5-out offense, he might be averaging 32. You know, like, Shea is not pulling threes like De'Aaron has kind of had to do this year. Like, that was a good evolution of his game. But he gets a 5-out offense, he gets to drive as much as Shea. I'm just saying, I think De'Aaron could outplay Shea in a series. That doesn't necessarily mean scoring more points, because there's different roles on these teams. I think they'd have a chance. I am running short on time here, so overtime.
Let's get it.
Drake responded. Wait, did we get to? I don't think we got to Cole's response either. An apology.
Yeah.
So give me a whole overview here. How you feeling about the apology? Drake responds. Kendrick's initial shit. How we feeling here?
I was first and foremost really surprised by Kendrick and what he did. I wasn't expecting it. We haven't heard from him in a minute since Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, which felt like a while ago. So I wasn't expecting to hear him on Futures. I thought the diss was cool, but honestly, I think people were more excited to hear Kendrick and excited for just rap beef.
The beat was also sick.
It was. It wasn't like – the beat was amazing. So got to give Metro credit for that. But like, I didn't think it was just this crazy, oh my God, look at what Kendrick did type verse, even though it was great. I do think Cole's was a bit underwhelming because clearly his heart was not in it. He said that it was a jab. Like,
he took it down, bro. I just don't want it on my playlist still.
Like, it hurts my feelings a little bit, bro, because Cole has spent years at this point now talking about he's one of the best. Anybody who wants it could get it. He got somebody who wanted it, and he apologized and said, oh man, like, this wasn't me. And so that was a little bit disappointing as a huge Cole fan, honestly. And then Drake, I thought the way he went about releasing it was a little odd, going through like leaks and DJ Academics, but ultimately there was like not really one bar wasted. I thought he was kind of getting at everybody. Rick Ross,
Ja Morant got a strike, bro.
I was like, I'm like getting nasty out here. Kendrick, he got at, he called him like midget.
You were, bro, I borderline got size seven shoes, so that was wild.
That's all right, man. That's all right. Nobody would ever known that if you didn't.
I'm not over here claiming I'm big stepping, though. You know, it's all good.
Yeah, bro, but it, I mean, I thought Drake was like, and the whole like Top Dog taking 50% of Kendrick's revenue and whatnot, I thought that was all pretty well put together.
Which, how long ago did he get off that TDE deal? Do you know?
A minute, right? He's been like PG Lang for, I want to say, like a couple years. Okay. So that was like kind of old news, but like,
gotcha.
Not bad though at the same time for Drake.
Yeah. It's cool though. I'll say on the Cole thing, I kind of, it felt on brand for Cole.
It did.
To me, you know, and I kind of liked that. I get why. I think I asked you and you said you didn't like it for the sport of it, right? Yeah. And I agree with that.
Yeah.
I wish that we got the back and forth because this shit is fun, bro. I also appreciate Cole for being willing to do that because I think a lot of guys, even if they wanted to, wouldn't have the like comfort with themselves to actually go do it. So I liked it because I thought it was on brand for Cole. Now, if Kendrick comes out and says more shit and you still say quiet, I'm going to need you to pipe up a little bit. That's all I'm saying. Because Kendrick's was light. So I get it. Also, I wasn't a huge To Pimp a Butterfly guy. There's great songs in there. Don't get me wrong. And he's preaching. I'm just saying, like, it's not necessarily on that many playlists for me. But calling it boring was kind of crazy considering, yeah, like, if somebody doesn't like Cole, that's what they're going to say about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I personally, I love To Pimp a Butterfly, and I'm like, I thought there were better ways to kind of get at Kendrick a little bit. But even having said that, bro, as a huge Cole fan, I was like, I'm standing with my guy. Like,
oh yeah,
if it's boring, fuck it, it's boring to me too. Like, knowing deep down, like, I would never really say that. That's a great album, but
I'm with you.
Yeah, I was ready to like kind of be on Cole's side of the back and forth.
Yeah, I got a, you know, enticing Instagram ad for a Cole graphic tee the other day, and I'm not gonna lie, I definitely bought that shit. I do not care about him. Okay, apologize, right. Man. I was like, I do not care. This shirt is fire, and I love me some Cole. So, and I'm with the Drake stuff. I think the leak thing is interesting. I'd imagine there were like rumors he's gonna drop an album Friday. That would make sense to me, and you put this on there, you know. But at the same time, almost like weirdly, because I'd imagine he did it, right? That he's the one that leaked it, or his people, or whatever.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, like, kind of props to you, because that's almost willing to not make money off of it. You know what I mean? At least initially. Yeah. So I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying it. My little brother, who clowns on Drake all the time, senior in high school, on my dad's side, text me and was like, this is the most I've liked a Drake song in a minute. He's kind of spitting.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, just saying. Drake is as corny as dude can be. There's no denying that dude is, he cooks. He does numbers.
He's like a one of one. And I also respect the fact that he's like one on how many ever at this point.
The 20v1.
Like, yeah, he's like, all right, what's up? Like, I'm gonna go at you, and you. So I do respect that a lot.
What do you think of the what did he say? I don't care what Cole say, that dot shit was weak as fuck.
Yeah.
Was it weird that he dropped Cole to you?
Nah, I feel like that was just more of like I don't think that was like a diss or anything.
I didn't either.
Like, it's like, I'm not with that. Like, Cole can do that if he wants, but I'm not doing that.
I took it the same. So, are the Kings, Warriors Kings, which one is Future? Which one is Drake? Wait, no, hold on. Which one's Kendrick? Which one's Drake?
Oh, man. Yeah. At this point, bro, I'm going to say, just based on ability, I'm going to say the Warriors are Kendrick, I'll say, because I think when it's all said and done, I imagine Kendrick is probably going to win whatever is going on right now. And I feel the same about the Warriors. I think the Kings and Drake have a good chance. They can make it look good, make it sound good. But at the end of the day, I don't necessarily think that they're going to outdo Kendrick and the Warriors in a beef or a playing game.
There we go. Well, we somehow tied it in. So
we did. I liked it.
We will definitely be back after this first playing game and previewing the second playing game is the game plan. But appreciate you hopping on, Hunter. I think people should definitely check out your, and if you haven't pushed it again, I will. But your piece on Keegan's defense earlier in the year, I think is pretty fitting right now with them going into the Warriors. Definitely check out that and all your work at theathletic.com, at HuntPatterson_ on Twitter as well. Any of my work previewing this a little bit as well, and definitely we'll get into stuff as the season ends whenever that is the case as well on SacktownSports.com. And check out King's Pulse on any audio or visual platforms. Subscriptions, likes, and reviews are always appreciated. And you'll hear from us again in the next couple days.